This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
It is hard to talk about the story of Anna Walsh without immediately feeling the weight of everything that she carried, everything she built, and everything she was trying so hard to keep afloat long before the moment she disappeared. And in my opinion, if you really want to understand how this case spiraled into national attention, you have to zoom out and look at the imbalance that defined her marriage. You have to look at the pattern of behavior, the stress, the responsibilities she managed, and the person she was managing them alongside. Because to me, this isn't just the story of a missing woman. It's a story of a woman who was succeeding in spite of the person she was married to, a woman who appeared to be holding together a life with a partner who, based on publicly documented behavior, seemed far more comfortable creating chaos than contributing to stability. And the contrast between their trajectories in those last couple of years is impossible to ignore. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section as we get into this. YouTube is where to do that. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. And hit subscribe there as well. Really appreciate that. We're trying to get to 100,000 subscribers. We're getting close. We're over 80 now. So please, really trying to do that. Maybe by the end of the year with your help, if you can hit subscribe on YouTube. And again, thank you so much for that. By all public accounts, Anna was someone with direction. She was someone with drive, someone colleagues admired, someone employers trusted, someone with a reputation for reliability, ambition, and resilience. And juggling three kids, two states, a demanding job, and a husband already tangled in a federal fraud case. She did it all while projecting strength. Something I'm going to guess he knows nothing about and also probably couldn't stand. Meanwhile, the man she was legally tied to, Brian Walsh, brought something very different into that home. Now, this is my opinion based on publicly reported facts. Brian's documented history paints the picture of someone with a long pattern of deception, instability, and choices that consistently pulled him away from responsibility rather than towards it. So it's no shock that we are where we are. Years-long fraud schemes, lying to federal investigators, forcing Anna and others to carry the consequences of decisions they didn't make. To me, that's not just a marital imbalance, that's emotional labor on steroids. A dynamic where one person is building, and the other is draining. And when you're left trying to raise a family, that dynamic becomes suffocating. I've been there. As Anna accelerated in her career, earning promotions, taking on more responsibilities, expanding her role in Washington, D.C., Brian's world narrowed into probation requirements, restitution demands, and legal consequences. And in my opinion, when a partnership becomes that lopsided, it creates a predictable emotional environment, pressure on one side, fear and insecurity on the other. You don't need a psychology degree to recognize what appears to be a classic pattern. One partner flourishing, the other struggling, one growing, the other stagnating. One moving upward, the other locked in place. And when someone already has a history of deceit and manipulation, that kind of imbalance can trigger exactly the kind of fragile, defensive, spiraling behavior prosecutors have described in this case. So when New Year's Eve 2022 came around, the last time Anna was seen alive, she reportedly didn't seem fully herself. Friends have said she appeared distracted, stressed. And when someone's life is as overloaded as hers was, those signs matter. Then she went home, a home that by January 1st, prosecutors allege became the scene of something violent and irreversible. And they're telling the moment Anna walked through that door, she was stepping into a situation already shaped by Brian's past choices. And their allegations, paired with the forensic evidence revealed publicly, paint a grim picture. But my own opinion is shaped just as much by Brian's behavior after Anna's disappearance as by what prosecutors say happened before it. Because from the moment Anna was last heard from, Brian's actions, those that have been publicly documented, do not resemble the actions of a husband in crisis. They resemble the actions of someone managing a narrative, someone constructing an alibi, someone responding not to the fear of a missing wife, but the fear of being questioned. This is what strikes me. When a spouse disappears, the first instinct of any emotionally grounded, responsible partner is alarm. Panic, calls, searches. But prosecutors say Brian didn't report Anna missing. Her employer did. And to me, that alone says something important about who Anna was and where the center of responsibility in that marriage existed. The timeline prosecutors have laid out shows Brian claiming he believed she left for a sudden work emergency, yet he never contacted anyone to verify that, never checked travel records, never reached out to her job. That lack of initiative is, in my opinion, consistent with the broader pattern of avoidance and passively present throughout his documented history. Then there's the shopping trip. The images prosecutors entered into the record showing Brian pushing a cart of cleaning supplies, mops, tarps, buckets, gloves, chemicals are, in my opinion, extremely difficult to reconcile with innocence. And when combined with the Google searches, yeah, remember those? Some of the worst we've ever seen. Prosecutors say were made from a device in the home. Searches about dismemberment, decomposition, body disposal, and inheritance. The pattern, to me, it becomes a lot clearer. Now, let me be explicit for legal clarity. These searches are allegations presented by prosecutors, not proven facts in court. But we're talking about here, my opinion here, is that if those searches were indeed made by Brian, they would paint the picture of someone who was not confused or concerned about a missing wife, but someone urgently trying to solve a problem that he kind of created. This is a part of the timeline that, in my opinion, reveals the most about his psychological state, because a person in shock doesn't behave with that level of planning. A person in denial doesn't immediately begin researching body disposal. A person in distress doesn't take a trip to Home Depot for industrial cleanup materials. Those actions, if proven true, which, look, they're on camera, reflect what many experts would call a reactive attempt to regain control after an extreme act. Control through concealment. And then came the forensic findings. Again, prosecutors allege investigators discovered blood in the basement, a damaged knife with apparent blood on it, and items later recovered at a transfer station, including a hacksaw and a blood-stained rug. Nothing to see here, right? I'm not stating these things as proven facts. I'm stating what prosecutors have publicly claimed. But if those items are connected to this case, as they allege and appear to be, they point to deliberate attempts to handle a physical aftermath. The psychological interpretation here, in my opinion, is that when someone who depends on manipulation for emotional survival is suddenly confronted with consequences they cannot escape, they don't collapse, they adapt. And adaption in this context looks like concealment, fabrication, and delay. Which brings us to his interactions with law enforcement. Based on the prosecutor's statements, Brian's timeline and explanations contained a lot of contradictions. Video evidence reportedly disproved some of his claims. This, again, reflects a pattern documented through his past legal issues, a reliance on improvisational deception, an assumption that assumption, that he could talk his way through everything. Because he's likely done it in the past. That confidence or arrogance, depending on your interpretation, is, in my view, part of the psychological profile that makes this timeline feel so chilling. Because if you've spent years believing you can manipulate systems, people, and reality itself, and maybe he has, you eventually believe you're immune to consequences. And then came the competency claim. This year, in 2025, weeks before the trial, Brian's legal team requested an evaluation, claiming he might not be mentally fit to participate in his defense. Prosecutors countered that his documented behavior showed no signs of impairment. After a full evaluation, the judge agreed he's competent. It was an act. The competency motion, regardless of intent, resembled another delay tactic, another attempt to create confusion, another attempt to buy time, another instance of a man with a long history of postponing consequences, doing everything possible to shift the narrative again. But that tactic didn't land. He was found competent. The trial is moving forward. And now, looking at the full timeline, from the years of financial instability to the emotional imbalance to Anna's rising career to the alleged violence to the alleged cleanup to the alleged lies to the attempted delays, I think the coherent picture emerges. Not a proven fact pattern, but a behavioral one. One that we see here is a portrait of a relationship where one partner was consistently the adult and the other was consistently the liability. One was building a future. The other was trying to outrun a past. One was rising. The other was drowning. And when someone who depends on control feels that control slipping, especially when they already have a documented pattern of dishonesty and manipulation, the resulting behavior can turn volatile. Prosecutors allege that's what happened here. Based on the evidence they've described publicly, the timeline they've constructed, and the behavior they've documented, I can understand why they believe that. When Anna disappeared, the world immediately felt the weight of her absence. Colleagues knew something was wrong. Friends were concerned. Her employer reported her missing. Her digital life went silent. And meanwhile, her husband, according to prosecutors, was making purchases, researching disturbing topics, and giving investigators explanations that didn't align with objective evidence. As painful as it is to say, the behavior that prosecutors attribute to Brian after Anna vanished is not the behavior of a man overwhelmed by worry. It's the behavior, in my interpretation and most, of someone overwhelmed by consequences. And now the system is doing what Anna no longer can, holding him accountable. The trial will bring every allegation into the open, every timeline, every forensic detail, every inconsistency, every purchase, every device log, every witness account. It will all be examined under the harshest light imaginable. But no matter what the verdict ends up being, I believe the timeline itself tells a story. A story of a woman who deserved far better than the instability surrounding her. A story of a life with momentum, derailed by someone who appeared, based on the publicly documented behavior, to resent being eclipsed by her success. A story of a relationship that, in my opinion, was lopsided long before it turned tragic. Anna carried everything. She built everything. She held everything together. The tragedy of this case is that the person she supported the most may have been the one who fractured it all, as it is in so many cases and in so many relationships. The trial will give us the legal answers, but the timeline, as publicly known today, gives us something else. A sobering look at what happens when someone who relies on manipulation runs out of moves. And the person whose strength kept the family together is no longer there to carry the weight. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on this case. We're going to keep following it for you as this trial now is about to get started. He's competent. Jury selection begins soon, and we're going to be there every step of the way. So please do press subscribe so you don't miss our coverage of this trial, the case, as it continues to move forward. My name is Tony Bruschi, and we will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.